Hey everybody, this is Mike with the Mountain Weekly News. Welcome to episode number 11 of Everything Snowboarding and More. This week we've got a really interesting episode. We're going to start it off with, I've got recent avalanche death news, unfortunately, again. We're going to look at wildlife and wildlife issues across the state of Montana, Wyoming, and pretty much across the entire United States for that matter. I've got a really fun interview with Hazel Birnbaum. Hazel is competing on the Freeride World Tour, and she is one of the best professional free skiers in the world. Absolute ripper, and she managed to set off a pretty decent sized avalanche this weekend while competing. So we're going to kind of talk about that. We're going to also look at El Nino and La Nina and what that means for the coming winter and much more. So definitely stay tuned. Thanks for tuning in. This is Everything Snowboarding and More podcast number 11 from Jackson, Wyoming. So this week, we have the 24th avalanche death in the United States. I believe we're up to 25 or 26 now. But at the time of doing this podcast, the 24th avalanche death occurred in Oregon. And this one is really, really sad. It actually took 29-year-old avalanche director Kip Rand. Kip was the gentleman that was in charge of the avalanche forecast center in Oregon. This is one of the most well-respected people in the Pacific Northwest when it comes to snow safety, snow science. And the moral of this story, it is really, really hard to say this, but regardless of how much education you have in the backcountry, you can be a ski patroller, you can be a guide, you can be an avalanche director, and you can still get caught in avalanches. So this is just absolutely sad. Our thoughts and prayers go out to Kip Rand and his entire family and everybody at the Avalanche Center in Oregon and Wallala. It's just very, very sad. So at this point, I'm going to jump on to our interview with Hazel. We did a phone interview today, and so it might be a little soft because it was done over the phone, but Hazel has some really interesting things to say about skiing in the backcountry and what it's like to ski in a big mountain professional contest where you're in the backcountry, and how at that point you actually have to pay attention to avalanches and snow safety, as well as trying to put down one of these big, Hollywood type lines, which we'll let Hazel tell that story. So thanks again. This is going to be a really fun episode, and be sure to listen to what Hazel says. She definitely skis better than you and me. Fucking amazing.
life is cool and throws you off the thing.
I did. It was really hard for me to find your video clip because they have like your second run up. You can find your video clip, but you got to watch the whole show all the way through. So it's there, but it's kind of hidden.
Yeah.
And that's going to be part of my story because they don't have Sasha's fall on there either. And I'm like, I know it was a gnarly fall, but like that's, I don't know, that's part of fucking skiing and snowboarding backcountry.
Yeah, they definitely remove, I think they censored what they put up for sure.
Yeah. Did you on the Freeride World Tour, do you guys typically do inspection runs?
No. We only do inspection.
No inspection. So it's just, is it typically just like a visual inspection? Because you're at that level, you should be able to judge it that way.
Yeah, they don't want tracks on the slope because it's on event day, it's like not as clean riding as it could be, and I totally agree, like it's not as visually interesting to watch a competition on a track slope. Much more interesting to watch it and ski a slope without tracks in it, And I think that's the way it should be, you don't get to go and inspect a run in Alaska before you drop. You just get to check it out maybe once from the hell or from the ground. So that's, we only do visual inspection. Usually we get the day before, we have a whole, day to inspect. And then if it changes, that morning, we haven't seen the state for a few days because it had snowed a bunch. That morning we had 30 minutes before we could go up. So we had, a 30-minute inspection, and they also send us high-res photos so we can really check it out. So, yeah.
For sure. Did you check the avalanche report that day, or do you remember what the rating was for that particular part of the world?
No, like, it's hard. In Europe, there's not, like, your avalanche center. But as an athlete, I mean, I should, like, we just got, I think there was, like, 20 centimeters of fresh on the slope, so I definitely should know as an athlete, like, as a skier who skied the backcountry a bunch, like, yeah, I definitely was aware. This is like, the culture here. It's like, I'm definitely aware when I'm skiing backcountry lines, like, I'm hypersensitive to my surroundings and, like, what's happening, what's moving, and, like, totally way more aware, but also not sending really gnarly lines for the most part in the backcountry. Like, I'm more focused on my safety versus the line, like, charging a super sick line. And I feel like in competition skiing, your job is to, like, I'm trying to win, right? So I'm trying to send really sick lines. So I'm more focused on my line than, like, paying attention to whether or not I'm going to rip out, like, a slab or something like that. So that's kind of, like, and that's their job, I feel like, to manage and control the slope so that we can have the best show in the best conditions possible. Like, that's part of their job, right?
Right. I mean, so,
I answer that question?
Yeah, of course. Would you, as a skier, I mean, would you do anything different next time? You know, that same run or that same, you know, if you could go back 24 hours or 48 hours, I mean, would you have approached it the same way that you did?
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, that's the thing. Like, I'm not trying to point fingers at anyone. And this wise man once told me, if you're in an avalanche, you've done something wrong, right? So I totally admit, like, I fucked up. But the thing is, like, I also need to be set up for success as an athlete. What I would have changed is when I got into the choke, like, I hit these, like, little double, and then I made a big turn, threw up some spray, didn't see that I cut off, like, that had created, like, cut off a pocket. And then right away, as I threw up some spray, I had another feature lined up, so I aired that. And at that point, I had no idea that I released anything. So I'm cruising down, I'm, like, skiing into this chute, and obviously making a left turn. At that point, I should have looked uphill to see if anything was coming, but I didn't. And that's when I made a left turn and was like, oh, shit, here's this wall, and I'm just skiing into it, and there's nothing I can do. So, yeah, I definitely should have looked uphill to see if, like, you know, fluff was coming, but I just didn't think that there would be a wall of jiggers. Like, that was the difference. And, yeah, and also, like, I could have looked uphill, but at the same time, like, in a competition run, I'm so focused on skiing my line, and, like, my trajectory is fall line and hitting features that was the number one priority for me, because I'm trying to win, right? So I'm like, in a conference, so already my, like, awareness is going to be compromised. That's just the way it is. That makes sense.
Yeah, of course. And I really like the points that you talked to, because, you know, part of what I'm talking about in the article is the fact that, you know, this, you know, when you are in the backcountry, you're going to approach things maybe a little different than you are at that venue. You know, here you've got this big gnarly venue, you've got a pretty intense line picked out. You know, I've been there, I've been in the start gate before, and, like, all those nerves, you're very focused on your run. To have that avalanche component as well, those typically don't go together. You know, so I really, and watching your video, I mean, it's when you see this article, you're gonna be really interested, because I got lots of screen grabs, like, from your POV from the Free Ride World Tour, and, like, I can literally see the slab starting off of one of your turns, and it is ripping out below you. And the only way I recognize that is I've had the same exact wind slab do that to me here in the Tetons. And so when I saw it ripping out all below you and all to the right and left, I was like, oh shit. And then all of a sudden, when you ski back into that chute, I mean, obviously you didn't see it, and I knew you were such a powerful skier. For one time, for like a half a second, I thought you were gonna power through it. I was like, maybe she's just gonna be like big wave surfing, like, I got this. But it, I mean, it fucking slammed you so hard. And then Which brings up the next point. As an athlete on the Freeride World Tour, are airbags mandatory?
Yeah, they are. And I was asked at the bottom, like, why I didn't pull my airbag, and other people have asked me that as well. But I typically don't ski with an airbag, right? An airbag is a tool to help you, just like everything else that you beacon is a tool that helps you. It doesn't prevent avalanches, and it doesn't guarantee your safety. But at that point, if I don't use an airbag normally, my instinct was, like, to cover my head and make sure my body, like, goes with, so that when I hit things, like, I'm not causing more damage, and it's not to grab my handle and pull my airbag, you know? Like, my number one priority was, like, covering my head, and that's what I did. I didn't grab my airbag handle, because for the most part, I was like, well, we kind of just see what happens, and as long as I'm, like, covering my head, then I think that that's what's going to help me the most. So, yeah, I didn't pull my airbag, and had I pulled it, like, would they have continued the comp? I don't know. Like, that's speculation. I mean, you definitely shouldn't put that in there, but there's a possibility that, yeah.
Well, I mean, and honestly, I really appreciate your honesty, and this is one of the reasons I love you truly as a friend. I mean, I don't ski with an airbag. I think it is a tool. I think certain times, certain places, people can use it. But yeah, I mean, yourself, you don't ski with that. Typically, an avalanche happened, you went to your fight or flight mode that you were taught. And I mean, the fact that somebody told you, a wise man, you know, if you're in an avalanche, you have done something wrong. That is the case. And it's really amazing that you're able to be humble enough to see that, because that's something I try to explain with all these avalanche accidents we've had. I mean, I'm about to talk about the 24th death in the United States this year. And, you know, unfortunately, these are. I mean, it's the wrong place at the wrong time. It's some people have fucked up. And, you did what you were supposed to, and it was a ripping run. And, I mean, that snow looked good. I mean, obviously, you did state something as well that, you know, with your experience, speaking of your experience, like, what do you do for a living, and, like, how have you gotten to the Freeride World Tour? Because I know you personally, but for all of our, you know, the people listening to this, what's, you know, kind of what has been your progression to get to this level of free skiing?
So I started ski patrolling at 18, and I was a patroller for 8 years. And I worked at a Class A avalanche resort. I led multiple routes as a, like, blaster. I had my blasting license for, I think, like, 6 years. It's definitely lapsed now, but I would say I have, like, a fair amount of experience managing terrain. And now I compete, and I spend a lot of time in the backcountry skiing and in the Sierras. So that's what I do now. I stepped away from patrolling because I felt like want to go in a different direction. So that's my experience. Another thing to add is, like, the women started at 8:15, and we even brought it up to the organizers, but we didn't get to see the forerunners go, right? And the forerunners kind of tell you what the conditions are like. And so we were already at the top of the venue waiting to drop, and we had no idea what the conditions were like because we didn't get to see the forerunner go. So I really feel like, had I seen the forerunner go, I would have skied my line differently and had way more awareness of what was happening, because the forerunner, you can see in the video, but you should probably look at it, the forerunner probably at least 4 or 5, like, different, like, had 4 or 5 different pockets released on him and run through the whole shoot. You should probably definitely look at that. So, yeah, we didn't get to see the forerunner, and I think that it would have made a huge difference in my decision-making at the time.
Well, and honestly, oh, sorry, go ahead. Well, in watching Francesca, is it pronounced Francesca? I mean, her run right before you, I mean, she starts, you know, kicking out some decent size, whether you call it slough or slabs, and she ends up getting cliffed out. And then it's really interesting, one of the announcers during yours, he mentions some, I mean, the verbiage that he used was so interesting. He's like, oh, it's a little slough, and then they're like, oh, no, that's more than a slough. And it, you know, they start talking about the stability of the snow, and he's like, oh, it's, you know, we've had a little bit of snow and wind, but it's not a big, and I'm just like, wow, you've had a lot of snow, you've had a major wind event, and you're playing this off like it's no big deal, yeah. And then people are setting off slides.
First of all, a slough, can you, is there a visible fracture in a slough?
Right.
Does the slough propagate?
Right.
And it have a powder cloud?
See, and that's, and yeah. I wonder how much of that is the politics of, like, you know, the Free Ride World Tour and Swatch, and it, again, it...
I don't know, I would just look up the definition of a slough. Like, a slough comes off your skis and collects energy, right?
Right.
That's something, like, you create. Not necessarily, like, as you see in that video, a shooting fracture with a visible crown.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, you...
No, that's, I feel like that's the difference between a slough and a slide. That's, like... Down
today,
but
yeah, no, of course.
Like, there's
it is totally, yeah. And you can really see it, especially in your point of view video, because it does start cracking and propagating, you know, out in front of you and to the side. And I mean, and at that point, I think you were so committed, and you know, you just hammered your turn, and you knew where you were going, and all of a sudden, you weren't expecting that snow to be there. So, last but not least, Hazel, I'm glad you're okay. Was that your own personal airbag, or what brand of airbag are you using while you're competing in these competitions?
Oh, that's a great question. I'm using a Backcountry Access bag. They will supply them for you, but I have a deal with BCA, so definitely using BCA products.
Great. Well, we really like what, you know, Edge and the BCA team's doing out in Boulder. You know, they're definitely keeping a lot of people alive in the backcountry, and obviously, you know, it's wonderful that they're supporting you as an athlete that's out there getting after it.
Yeah, and I just want to make sure, like, I posted that video on my Facebook, but the whole point of my post was not to point fingers and not to lay blame to anyone. It was just to bring up the fact that we're making really good decisions in split sets, like, in a second. Potentially catastrophic, or really, it's like good. It's just about the decision making and the risk versus reward in big mountain competition. I'm not like, definitely don't want to point any fingers at the Free Ride World Tour, because I realize that you have a lot on your plate, and those are any organization for that matter. Like, I just want to be fairly, I guess, diplomatic about it. Neutral. I would like to remain neutral if possible.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, and last but not least, Hazel, you know, the fact that people were calling you out for not pulling your airbag, you know, don't ever listen to anybody that's going to armchair quarterback you, because you were there. You skied that line. You skied it powerful. You skied it better than anybody I know is going to ski it, and you came out of that avalanche the way that you should have. So the fact that the airbag was not
pulled.
Yeah, no,
I'm not pulling. Like, I feel like the airbag is just another tool, and like, if anyone had a qualm with me not pulling it, like, that's, they're retarded. You know, like, once you're in, like, I it's not like I was, like, sitting on top and had access, like, my hand could reach over there. Like, I was in, like, a washing machine, so it's, like, really hard to, like, even get your bearings to grab that handle, right?
I mean, and
that's, like,
that brings up another great point. I mean, that's why I stopped using the Avalung. I mean, you're going through a washing machine cycle, and you're going to try and get something in your mouth, or you're going to try and pull that cord. You might not know where your shoulder is, where your knee is. I mean, you're fucking getting tumbled.
Exactly.
And last but not least...
Like, you just got to, like, bring it back to the basics. And another thing, that's just for your article, like, the girl that dropped before me was Nadine Balmes, and she's like a two-time champion on the world tour, and the difference is, like, she dropped in and she cracked off a little pocket, but it was rookie's never, and she could see it and stop. Like, she's like right over this huge cliff, and like, that's the difference. Is like, I didn't see it, and it was behind me, and like, skied into this wall.
Wow.
Not to mention, like, I lost both of my skis. And then they're like, we'd really like you to go up and do another competition. Oh my God. And
So are we gonna
pretty much, like, because of that, it cost me my whole season and, like, not requalifying, you know?
So are we going to see you in Haines?
No.
No.
He won't see me in Haines.
Ah, bummer. Okay, well.
Right, so this was the third event, which was like the decision of whether or not you make the cut to go to Haines. So a lot was riding on this, on my run. And basically what happened. I had the opportunity to go up and do another run, but it was really like, at that point, I didn't have a pair of skis. I was pretty shaken up and like pretty sore from just what happened. I was like, well, really, I'd like to go do another run. I'm like, well, fine. I like to borrow some skis. They're tightening my din to the start date, which is pretty disconcerting. And I was like, well, I'm just going to go ski pal. Like, I'm not going to go ski a really committed line on a pair of skis that I've never skied on before. So, yeah, I went and skied like a power run to finish it off. And that's why. That's what's up on the internet. It's like, you just cruising pal.
Well, speaking of cruising pal, yeah. I think Mount Baker is going to have a really big season next year, and I'm going to probably go back up there. So we'll have to meet up at Baker and take some turns. And yeah, wish you the best of luck, Hazel.
Oh yeah.
Good luck with everything, and yeah, just keep doing your thing. It's been really fun watching you over the last couple of years, and yeah, you're fucking
Thanks,
crushing
Mike.
It. Okay, so that was our interview with Hazel. Hazel, yeah, she's a great friend of mine. She's just an absolute sweetheart. So it's really cool to see Hazel doing well. And I wish her the best of luck. And hopefully next year she ends up back on the podium. Honestly, she doesn't really need it. She is the best female skier in the world, or at least that I've seen so far. So let's talk about weather. El Nino. El Nino did not really deliver what it was supposed to as of yet. And when I say as of yet, the reason I say that is the long-term forecast are showing a very cold and a very wet April and May. I know you might not want to hear that as we've had these unseasonably warm temperatures as of late, but things are changing. And what's actually happening is we have a transition to an ENSO neutral. And this is actually going to take place in the Northern Hemisphere this spring and early summer. With that transition to ENSO neutral, I know I'm getting kind of techie here, that brings in La Nina, and La Nina does very, very well for the Pacific Northwest. So my money is on being up in Mount Baker, Nelson, BC, somewhere like that next winter. It's going to be epic. I'm sure here in the Tetons it's going to be good too, but if you didn't get your fill this year, don't worry, it's coming. It's coming late spring this year, and then it is going to be massive next year. So don't believe the El Nino hype. La Nina is actually the one that we want to pay more attention to. So yeah, the sea temperatures are still warm. The surf has been firing everywhere, and yeah, it's definitely a good time to get out there and go explore the world, especially with these warm temperatures. And the value of the dollar, I mean, you can go up to Canada, Central, South America, pretty much everywhere the dollar is strong. So definitely take advantage of these El Nino, La Nina conditions, snow or no snow, and get out there. Let's see, this week the Red Bull Magazine did a Jimmy Chin feature, and it this thing is stunning. Jimmy Chin is... you might want to call him the Laird Hamilton of the mountains. I mean, this guy, if you saw the Meru climbing movie... he's gnarly. And if you haven't seen Meru, I highly recommend watching that on Amazon. Just be ready to sit on the edge of your seats. It is nuts. Climbers, they're a different beast. So anyway, Jimmy Chin, he's a climber, photographer, and skier. He did this amazing feature in the Red Bull magazine. And there's actually a two-page spread of Stephen Koch, who I interviewed last week, just going up this gnarly ice wall. And then there's another picture of Conrad Anker on his day off, free climbing something with no ropes. And yeah, so those guys are absolutely gnarly. So kudos to Red Bull Magazine and for Jimmy Chin and all those guys for getting some much, much deserved credit. And yeah, I mean, he's definitely one of the best in the world when it comes to documenting adventures and going out and doing big shit as well. In Wyoming news, the Wyoming legislature has been hit by a new budget reality, according to AP. So what's happening is Wyoming used to make a lot of money on coal. Well, we're not making that money right now. So how is the state of Wyoming going to make money when coal is down? Well, how about charging $6,000 per grizzly tag? That's one way to make some money. So Wyoming is going to open up grizzly bear hunting. Yeah, this sucks. I know I want to be more editorial with this, but I'm going to inject some personalness in here. Grizzly bears, at one time, there was millions of grizzly bears in the United States. Okay, hundreds of thousands at that. There were numerous packs of grizzly bears throughout North America. Now we have one in Yellowstone, and we have, I think, 5 or 6 up in interior BC. If anybody thinks that hunting grizzly bears right now is a smart move, it's not. And since we're talking about killing wildlife, in Montana, they ship 30 freaking bison from the Yellowstone National Park to a slaughterhouse. Did you hear that right? Yellowstone National Park, where people spend all this time and all this energy and all this money to come and look at wildlife. Now we're killing fucking animals inside within the park. So 30 bison have been shipped to slaughter from Yellowstone National Park. Again, I mean, this is hard. Tens of millions of buffalo used to roam around the United States. Buffalo, bison, whatever you want to call them, they're not here anymore. And the fact that we're starting to regulate things because of ranchers and people that have money, you know what? Wildlife was here first. Wildlife should be here. And anybody that wants to control how many or how little wildlife we have, you're fucking nuts. Excuse my French, but one day you will meet God, you will meet some sort of a maker, and you're going to realize that wildlife is just the same as us. And when you put wildlife on a different level than humans, that's an issue. We're all in this together. So I know I just got a little fired up there. What else? Let's see. Speaking of the bison, until the 1800s, almost all the bison were driven to extinction. Only dozens were left. Okay, in the 1800s or in the 1900s, President Roosevelt stepped in and he made Yellowstone a protected area for these bison, for these buffalo. This is less than 100 years ago, and so yeah, it's great that the population is back. We really should not go play in God. It's just bad. And, you know, all these tourists come to see the wildlife. It just raises a question, you know, what's more important, the rancher's needs or the needs of this planet and the beings on this earth as a whole? That's something I really want you to ponder for this podcast. So I know I've been kind of ranting, rambling all over the place. I've had an interesting week. Mom, this is the first you're going to hear about this. My week has involved orthopedic surgeons, radiology, and MRIs. I will update next week. Everything is going to be good. But really important to keep your mind, body, and soul all together and intact. And I'm rambling. I'm all fired up on steroids right now. Not the kind to make my body big because I'm already a tough guy. But that's it for this week. Thanks for tuning in. Really, I thank you, Hazel. I appreciate your open honesty and your conversation. And for all of our readers, thanks for tuning in. Be sure to share this podcast with people that you think would dig it. I do this because it's a passion of mine and I'm fired up on the mountains and life. And I hope you are too. So thanks again. Everything Snowboarding and More. This is Mike, episode number 11. Wow. Peace.